That's right. This is Back to Back, where every week we cast the spotlight on an artist and dive into their lives and discography. My name is Daryl Ong.
And I'm Off New Thing.
Today on the show, we are going to focus on a musical prodigy that celebrated his 82nd birthday this month, a living legend, pianist Herbie Hancock.
Thank you.
just heard Butterfly by Herbie Hancock. Many different versions for that tune, but you just heard the version from 1974 album Trust, the original, if you will. Like many of Herbie Hancock's songs, he has a way of getting a warm human tone out of his signature instrument, the Fender Rhodes, on this lush ballad. It features, of course, the saxophone playing of his headhunter bandmate, Benny Maupin.
Yeah, today on the program, we are casting the spotlight on Herbie Hancock in conjunction with his 82nd birthday this month. A bit of background, of course, he's one of the most celebrated and wonderfully expressive pianists of the last century. His playing and production can be heard on hundreds and hundreds of albums, some of which, including the work with Miles Davis and his own band, the Headhunters, are considered masterpieces that shape the future of modern jazz.
But back to the beginning, Herbie Hancock was considered a prodigious talent and started young at the age of 11, where he played the first movement of a Mozart concerto with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra and formed his very first band while still in high school. He also had an affinity for electronic science as he studied electronic engineering and music composition in college, which would lead to his love of all things electronics when it came to instruments via his use of electric pianos and synthesizers in the jazz genre later in his career.
Yeah, after graduating from college in 1960, Herbie Hancock was discovered by trumpeter Donald Byrd and played with his group. After 2 years of session work with Byrd as well, Phil Woods and Oliver Nelson, he signed off with Blue Note as a solo artist. His debut album came in 1963, it's called Taking Off, and it was an immediate success, producing the hit Watermelon Man.
In the year 1963, the one and only Miles Davis invited Herbie Hancock to join the Miles Davis Quintet, and during his 5 years with Miles Davis, Herbie Hancock and his colleagues, Wayne Shorter on tenor sax, Ron Carter on bass, and Tony Williams on drums, recorded many classics, including ESP, Nefertiti, and Sorcerer. Later on, Herbie Hancock also appeared on Miles Davis's groundbreaking In a Silent Way album.
Yeah, Herbie Hancock definitely a pioneer in experimentation when it came to jazz and was at the forefront of jazz rock and jazz funk fusion experiments, spearheaded, of course, by his groundbreaking group Headhunters and that album and vocoder heavy funk from the album Sunlight in the 70s. Back in the music, here's a track that's one of the more complicated tracks by the Headhunters, which comprise of Herbie on keys, Benny Maupin on sax and clarinet, Harvey Mason on drums, Paul Jackson on bass, and Bill Summers on percussion. This is the band's first self-titled album. Together that same year also made history, being the very first jazz album to go platinum and sold more than 1 million copies, which was an amazing feat back then, especially for a jazz album.
This next one can be found on the Headhunters' second outing together with 1974 album Trust. It was originally meant to be written for the 1973 film The Spook Who Sat By The Door, and this track in particular was also used as a demo for Herbie Hancock to showcase his style of playing the Fender Rhodes electric piano, which will soon be ubiquitous with 70s era music. This track is a notorious cult favourite among drummers, where drummer Mike Clark is said to have provided the missing link between the straight feel of funk music and the swinging rhythmic freedom of jazz drumming, where the beat constantly evolves while still making your head pop. The Headhunters, together with Herbie Hancock, with the track Actual Proof. Thank you.
taking us back to 1978. That was the music of Herbie Hancock from the album Sunlight, and that was I Thought It Was You. Probably an album that's best known as the first Herbie Hancock album that he sang on, of course, with his signature vocoder assistance. This was also the era where Herbie Hancock ventured into jazz, inflected disco and pop music, and honestly, in hindsight, all these years later, has definitely become his signature sound.
Yeah, that's for sure. These days, the sound of vocoders are quite common, right? Not to be mistaken with autotune, of course, and can be found in modern songs like 24K Magic by Bruno Mars, or, you know, one of the many Daft Punk songs. But back then, it was a brand new invention that was initially meant for military use, where the primary function of the vocoder was to convert human speech and break it down to digital bits, giving it that famous robotic sound.
Yeah, so for Herbie to jump into it, definitely an innovator, right? You're tuned in to Back to Back. We're going to come back after the break with another tune from that album, Sunlight. Daryl and Ofni with you on the show this evening. Stay tuned, only here on BFM
Welcome back to Back to Back with myself, Off New Thing, and Daryl Ong. This week, we are celebrating the 82nd birthday of jazz pianist Herbie Hancock. You just heard another one from him, taken from the album Sunlight, called Come Running to Me, Herbie's first vocal album, which was made possible thanks to the use of a vocoder, making it possible for him to vocalize what he played on the synthesizer.
Yeah, that track was written together with superstar songwriter Ali Willis, who has worked on huge hits like September by Earth, Wind and Fire and I'll Be There For You, which is only the biggest selling TV theme song of all time. This track's also the first introduction of Herbie's music for most hip-hop fans, as he was famously sampled by the legendary Jay Dilla for the track Get This Money by hip-hop group Slum Village that got the approval from Herbie when it was played to him.
And speaking of hip-hop, Herbie Hancock was responsible for helping Kanye West produce the track Robocop from his 808 and Heartbreak album in an uncredited contribution. You know, jazz and hip-hop, it's like distant cousins, right?
For sure.
All right, but enough of us. Let's hear from music educator and big Herbie Hancock fan, Asamat, as he says a word or two about Herbie Hancock.
So the story is this. I saw Herbie at Symphony Hall in Boston. And what happened was I went to Berkeley and I was staying on this street called Westland Avenue. Westland Avenue is right opposite Whole Foods. And guess what? Symphony Hall is like literally a 5-minute walk from my place. So I saw Herbie play. And of all the things that I remember, to be honest, is that he was really talkative at that show. I mean, you know, the playing was amazing. It was really, I think some parts of it, really outside, really dissonant stuff. But he was talking so much, explaining and, you know, sharing his thoughts and stuff. He was very, very talkative. So of all the things, I'm just like, wow, he has a lot of things to say. Not just the music, but just his thoughts on things. Yeah, that was the show. It was interesting. It was an interesting show. So the first time I heard Herbie Hancock was actually when I started music college, and it was Hanafi Imam, a legendary bass player, musician. He got us to play Watermelon Man, which is a song from Herbie's debut album, Taking Off. At that time, I thought it was like, oh, this is kind of, you know, funny, kind of catchy tune. I had no idea that it would be the beginning of me discovering a lot of Herbie's music. Yeah, so it was Watermelon Man. He's had so many different kinds of music, different styles, different sounds. But for me, it has to still be the Blue Note era, you know. Those Blue Note records like Maiden Voyage, Speak Like a Child. But especially for me, Maiden Voyage, because, you know, it had Ron Carter, Tony Williams in the record. It was like modal, post-pop. It was something I could relate to, because before that, I was listening to like Charlie Parker. I was like kind of force feeding my ears, listening to like Bird's Best Pop, which is an album of Charlie Parker's tunes, and also Miles Davis kind of blues. So it was kind of like, okay, Maiden Voyage was kind of like what happened after Charlie Parker and what happened after the whole kind of blue modal thing. It was an extension of that. So for me, that era, you know, Blue Note era, and that is still acoustic, basically. Yeah, he is a musical prodigy and an innovator. And, you know, I think with Herbie, I feel that he's always searching for what's the next thing he wants to explore. To be honest, I think he could have stopped making records after his first 5 or 6 early records, and that would have still be amazing. A lot of people don't make that as many like amazing landmark records, you know. But you know, Herbie keeps exploring. I mean, check out his later records, you have Lionel Loeke on the records, and he's always collaborating with all these different musicians, different people, different styles, you know, the Joni Mitchell record. He's, you know, a lot of, he's just performed with a lot of musicians, and I think he's just someone who is constantly, okay, who do I collaborate with? What kind of repertoire? What kind of music? You know, he's looking at the next thing. What's the next thing? And that I think is kind of, you see it in the kind of music he chooses to record and release. As a music educator, I think the biggest influence his music has made is just how he thinks of melody, harmony, and groove. He seems to really have all of those connected. I still remember I had a class with Steve Roshinsky. He teaches advanced harmonic concepts and reharmonization techniques, in Berkeley, and we checked out some Herbie tunes in those classes, and it's like, wow, just how he looks at how, you know, how Herbie would write a melody and it would be catchy, but then the harmony would be dissonant, but depending on the era, you know, it's like strong groove, strong bass lines, you know, there's so much going on, and I think there's a lot you can learn from dissecting those things and seeing how they work together, how they interlock. For me, the legacy that Herbie would leave behind is really his compositions and his improvisational language. His compositions, just because, you know, a lot of people still play, people cover his tunes, people cover his arrangements of tunes, people discover, you know, different ways to play over originals or his tunes, or, you know, even standards, you know, by listening to how does Herbie play this, you know, what can you learn from that? And we're very fortunate because he is so well recorded, and so there's a lot of opportunity for someone like me, or like my students, or you know, people in my guitar club to listen to someone like Herbie Hancock. And even if you play guitar, you can discover how would he play a melody, how would he go through these chord changes, what is his improvisational language, how could you explore this. And that's the thing about Herbie, he's really well documented, and you know, and interviews and also all this, but yeah, really, his compositions and his improvisational language is something that will continue to shape many, many generations of musicians, I believe, after this. You know, thanks Herbie, and I'm still learning stuff, and there's so much more I'm gonna learn from his music, from your music. Thanks, Herbie.
89.9, Herbie Hancock, Tell Me a Bedtime Story, featuring Japanese songstress Kimiko Kasai, the first lady of jazz in Japan, if you will. That record was made in 1978, and quite an interesting story to this one. This rare six-track cover LP is called Butterfly, and was initially just released in Japan. In a less well-connected world of the late 1970s and the early 80s, this meant that the album slipped unnoticed past most listeners in Europe and in the US. Today, of course, with the internet, a different story these days.
Yeah, a bit of a cult favourite album. A couple of big stars on this release. Herbie's band was in Japan to play a show, and a Sony executive brought up the idea of an impromptu recording session. Kimiko, of course, jumped onto it and was an enriching experience for all that was involved. And she even said in an interview that Herbie invited her to join his ritual prayer before recording. Sounds like a nice guy.
Yeah, man of the people, for sure. This week on Back to Back, we are diving into Herbie Hancock's discography in conjunction with his 82nd birthday. More tunes to come, so do stick around only here on a Back to Back BFM 89.9.
Put you up. clouds we're on. I'll make you misbehave. I will make your fears disappear. Ain't no trick at all.
Magic number.
Welcome back to Back to Back with myself, Auf Nieu Tinh, and Daryl Ong. This week on the show, we are going into the discography of the one and only living jazz legend, Herbie Hancock. You just heard the tune, Magic Number, a disco boogie one from the man. The first track from his 32nd album, Magic Windows, that dropped in the year 1981. And I must say, with most albums that released in the 80s, it has a very strong 80s kind of sound.
Yeah, Magic Number features vocal contributions from disco and R&B singer Sylvester James Jr. and was an album that features no strings, brass, or any other instrumental orchestrations on this. Instead, in the liner notes of Magic Windows, it states that all the strings heard on the record were done by Herbie Hancock with the use of his many synthesizers and a modified Apple II computer. Being a disco boogie track, there's also a 12-inch single of Magic Number, where it's an extended version that's perfect for the dance floor. You have been tuning in to Back to Back with myself, Daryl Ong, and Auf Nieu Tinh. We have one more tune for you this week, but we'd love to hear from you. Tell us your favorite Herbie Hancock album or tune, and do tune in tomorrow, because on Track by Track, we are going through his Grammy-winning album, River, the Joni Letters.
But for tonight, let's play us out with one last Herbie Hancock tune from his discography. This last one is taken from his debut album, Drifting Off, and is one that's inspired by growing up in the 40s and 50s in Chicago. Herbie Hancock was around street vendors, including the Watermelon Man, who peddled the fruit.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the most famous jazz compositions ever recorded. Herbie Hancock was just 22 years old when he released this on his first album, Taking Off. It didn't do too well though, didn't make mainstream until Santa Maria, a Cuban composer known for his 1959 hit Afro Blue, which of course John Coltrane recorded. He did a cover of Watermelon Man, which landed at number 10 on the charts, bringing the song and Hancock to widespread acclaim.
Hancock's rendition of Watermelon Man features Freddie Hubbard on trumpet and Dexter Gordon on tenor sax. Ending off this episode with the song that made Herbie Hancock's career take off, it's Herbie Hancock with Watermelon Man, right here on Back to Back, BFM 89.9. Good night. Thank you.
Bye.